Good evening, everyone. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters. Paradigm Shifters, all over the planet, there are people making a difference in the collective of our species at this time of the Great Shift, and probably before and probably after. But our Paradigm Shifter today is a really delightful and colorful being, Chetan Parkin, who wrote a book called Human Design. Well, actually created, maybe invented, or brought together divination strands from the history of all of us to bring up your own divination system called Human Design, discover the person you were born to be. And I'm excited to talk to you. So welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Veronica. My pleasure to be here.
So you're a former mechanical engineer. So what are you doing playing around with divination?
Well, honestly, I have to make a confession right at the beginning here. I did not invent this system.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
Nobody on planet Earth, as far as I know, did invent it.
Okay.
It's a little bit beyond the intelligence of basically what we've got available to us here. Mm-hmm. But it is a system that does work here. And it was downloaded by an individual in 1987.
Hmm. So,
A Canadian gentleman from Toronto, I believe.
Uh-huh. I'm also Canadian, but I'm now American, kind of, you know. But so you're saying that he channeled it in?
Channeled is a kind of loose description. It was actually forced into him, from what I can understand.
Hmm.
You know, so it wasn't a particularly pleasant experience for him.
Hmm.
But he did survive the experience, and he did introduce it to the world, and as one of the first people to get to hear about it here in America.
Hmm. Now, you've had quite a bit of spiritual history yourself, because I see here that it combines the I Ching, the Kabbalah, astrology, the chakra system, and more, right?
Yes, it does. It combines these four ancient wisdom traditions with a couple of modern-day sciences, neutrino physics and the human genetic coding system.
Oh, okay.
And it just fuses all these different entities together, so we end up with a new system. It's not like reading astrology or the I Ching or anything like that. It's a completely individuated system that is synthesized out of these other traditions.
And do you feel like you were one of the first people to carry this along because of your spiritual traditions with Rajneesh, now Osho?
Well, interesting that I did train as a mechanical engineer, and I was fairly successful at that. But I just came to a point in my life where life wasn't working for me. I couldn't make sense of it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have the answers that the Western education had been able to give me. And I did find myself in the company of Rajneesh, later called Osho, and lived in his company for about 11 years in different parts of the planet. He would guide people to basically use their most creative potentials.
Mm-hmm.
And I was guided to have a reading with a man in Bombay, now Mumbai. This man was a shadow reader, or Chaishastri, and he basically told me every last little detail about myself in the space of about 20 minutes. It was pretty amazing.
Wow.
And he, at the end of his session, said, I'd like you to come and work with me, because you know how to do this kind of reading. I hadn't the first clue what he was talking about, because, I'd never considered doing any kind of divination work at all.
Hmm.
But I turned him down flat, and he just laughed, and he said, well, you're going to do this work anyhow, and my suggestion is you learn how to read for people. Find a system you like to work with, and because sooner or later there's a system going to come into your life, and you're going to introduce it to thousands of people all over the planet.
Hmm.
And when Human Design showed up in my life in 1993, I'd been practicing reading for people in all kinds of different systems, and when this system showed up in my life, I knew right away this is what this shadow reader in India had been pointing my attention towards.
Hmm. And you love it, eh? So did you set up the software yourself?
I've worked with various individuals around the planet. I have a friend in Germany who's built the software for this.
Hmm.
And he was very kind to make a software that goes along with the book.
Hmm. So this is a funny question, but I know that Osho, who a lot of you know already, Rajneesh, when he passed over, became Osho, and still does a lot of teaching from the other side, doesn't he?
It's nonstop.
Did he have something to do with Human Design? Do you know what I'm saying? Is like, did they bring it through from his influence as well?
I, I can't honestly say that he had put specific attention on that. He certainly understood about astrology and other divination systems.
Mm-hmm.
He used to tell stories about how a famous astrologer read for him when he was a child and said if he got past the age of 7, you know, then he'd turn into something pretty amazing in his life. So I don't think particularly Human Design had anything more to do with Osho than anywhere else. But, he's certainly... I felt his guidance towards engaging with this system.
Hmm. Well, so let's talk about the system itself. And we're grateful you did it because this is an amazing system, all right? And I'm also interested in talking a little more about Rajneesh and Osho, but I think we better get down to Human Design and find out what that's all about. So could you describe it, for example, what's different about it, and how did they weave together these different strands of like the Kabbalah and the I Ching and astrology and so on? How does it work?
Well, you know, I teach classes on this and showing people how the systems get together. It's a little involved. But we've basically, in the book, I've boiled it down to a very simple language. I call Human Design a 21st century self-remembering tool.
Self-remembering. I love that.
Self-remembering tool, because every one of us comes in with a perfect design. We all come in with a perfect concept and vehicle of how to get through our life.
And how to get to our dharma, I suppose, eh?
Well, yes, however you want to look on it. And basically, almost the moment we pop into the world, we're steered in a completely different direction. We get embroiled in all these traditions, all these nationalities, these religions, all these weird ideas of stuff.
Right.
We go to school, we get told about everybody else's life except our own.
Mm.
We get given everybody else's thinking processes. And told, you know, get on with it and work your life out. And so we're left kind of hanging in space on everybody else's concepts about life.
Mm-hmm.
And the very last thing we're informed about is how to be ourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so Human Design, basically, it's a 21st century self-remembering tool. It puts you exactly on the spot in informing you who it was you were born to be in this lifetime.
And one of the things I love about this book is something that I've been fighting all of my life, is trying to understand other people or other people's judgment of us, and becoming aware as I read the book that you've said so succinctly that it's really a mystery what each of us should be like. I mean, I know this, but I just love the way you said it. It's a mystery what each of us should be like. So isn't it funny that we're all compared one to the other, hey?
Well, you know, Veronica, you go down any beach on this planet, and I challenge you to find two grains of sand that are the same.
That's right.
So, you know, go around the 7 billion people on the planet and find two people the same. It's not going to be.
That's
right.
So
the whole concept of comparison is really a very ridiculous thing.
And yet we've all been struggling under that, probably most of us anyway, all our lives, eh?
Well, you get into comparison, and then you get into this thing called democracy. And then in democracy, you end up with 51% like one thing and 49% don't, and it's just too bad for them.
Right.
So, you know, democracy is a step on our way to becoming civilized.
So,
and in Human Design, there is no comparison. It's basically, you are here to be you.
And so you've got here some type, authority, defined channels, and profile. These are things that you, the divination is you take our birth times, is it birth dates?
Yeah, we start with a birth date, time, and place, same mm-hmm. as with astrology.
Mm-hmm.
And astrology basically gives us the placement of things in the universe around us at the moment of our birth.
Okay.
So this is the information basically that goes into finding out where things are. I call the Human Design chart basically it's like a snapshot of the universe for the moment of your birth. So you are basically completely connected into the universe. That's just the
Does that mean it? Like we're universal beings, and we're always working on that on this show and in my own reality. So you're saying not that the universe is vibrating toward us, but we are actually connected to what it is?
Yeah, we are it.
We are it. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, that's easy to understand.
I mean, the thing of it is, you know, the human vehicle only has so many senses to be able to engage with it.
Right.
But we are, you know, consciousness in human form. So we are, in our design, we're actually holding that flavor of the universe.
So are we able to become, if we follow this, And we'll get into more specific detail because you've worked over my patterns anyway, maybe your own as well. Are we able to really launch into being more multidimensional? That's a funny question, isn't it?
Well, they say about us that, specifically if they're looking at the brain, there's only about between 5 and 10% of it ever turned on.
Right.
So I would dare say there's room for expansion. I mean, they say about enlightened beings that they turn on everything, that they do connect into everything. It's just the human vehicle has its limits to just how much it can relate. I mean, people have been trying to express truth forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all kinds of wonderful books, Bibles and Qurans and Bhagavad Gita's and all these books, you know, trying to express what truth is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not truth, it's language. You know, truth is very much an individual experience. And if you don't know who you are and you don't know what this individual nature of yours is, there's no way you're going to find it.
Well, let's get to work on that. You can use my, I'm not ashamed of expressing mine, but we can use my chart for an example. And the Human Design System chart is really quite stunning, isn't it? Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah, it's a very amazing picture, this triangular picture. Within, there are these nine energy centers. We are these days a nine-centered being. The traditional chakra system is a seven-centered being, and it appears that we've evolved very much in sync with this movement into the Aquarian Age.
Hmm.
We are now a nine-centered being.
Hmm.
And these nine centers link together by what we call channels, and these channels basically are akin to the branches in the Tree of Life in the Kabbalah.
Hmm.
And on either ends of all these channels, there are what we call gates. There are 64 of these gates. And each one of these gates relates to one of the genes in our genetic coding.
Oh, wow.
So basically, when I'm looking at somebody's human design chart, I'm looking at a pattern, a picture of their genetic makeup.
Hmm.
So,
and when the gates open, do we get free of that genetics? Because you can tell I want to ascend, can't you?
Well, all of us want to ascend, Veronica. It's, it's just all of us have our own particular ways of being able to do that.
That's right.
But the thing of it is, how you do that is by becoming totally in tune with your nature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've done the charts of all kinds of enlightened people, and it's very clear to me, looking at their chart and then examining how they lived their life, they were absolutely in accord with who they were.
Hmm.
They weren't trying to be anybody else. And so, you know, the whole journey to becoming enlightened and ascending, it's about being in tune. You know, it's like hitting a tuning fork. It's like being in tune within your own being.
Yeah, that's true. And it's healing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So let's break it down to the kinds of people, the types of people.
Okay. So, you know, it sounds what we've been talking about so far is the potential for great complexity, but in actual fact, when you look at human design and you weave all these parts together, it actually comes down to these very, very simple things to understand in this, what I call, self-remembering tool. There are the three keys that we've put together, the type, authority, and profile. Now, there are five different types, and each one of them has one of these particular types as a description of how our vehicle carries us through life. Three of the types are energy types, two of them are non-energy types. The energy types are the manifester, the generator, and the manifesting generator. And the non-energy types are the projector and the reflector. So you have the type of a manifesting generator in this lifetime, Veronica.
Yes.
And as such, you know, with this design, you just have a ton of energy. You're always generating life force energy.
That's true.
And, you know, typically someone with a design like this, they get up in the morning, they get going, and they cruise through their day doing all kinds of things, and the only thing that ever stops you is complete exhaustion. And you just keel over.
Yeah, it doesn't happen too often, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you know, it's just this, you feel like you have this unlimited supply of energy. Of course, the great thing is to find out within yourself what to put that energy towards, you know, what it is that brings you fulfillment. And so there we come to the second key, which is the authority in how to make decisions. There are six of these different authorities. They're each outlined in great detail in the book. And each one of us choose one of these particular authorities for our lifetime.
I love that you call it authority, too, because there's always been that drive to find out what is the authorship of my life, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, the tendency is that we give our authorship away to everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we give it to the Pope, or we give it to the Imam, or we give it to the President, or somebody or other.
Or our lineage, our genetics.
Yeah. you know, we give it always away that, oh, the teacher must know better than I do.
Right.
And, you know, we fail to remember that actually we've got our own perfect authority that guides us perfectly in our own life. In your chart, you've got emotional authority, which basically means your whole life is about feeling your way through life.
Hmm.
And, you know, the nature of feelings is they're always shifting.
Right.
On one day, something can come to you and it looks like the greatest thing you've ever seen. And then the next day it comes to you and it's like, what did I see in it yesterday? It doesn't look so exciting at all. And so the moods are always changing. And some of the moods last longer than others. So what we say to somebody with an emotional authority like you have is, you know, this is a major lifetime of learning patience.
Oh.
To ride out the emotional wave until you come to a place of clarity where you're not attached to the expectations of how things are supposed to turn out, but you're in it for the ride, you're in it for the journey because it feels clear to engage. So that goes for activities, it goes for people that come in and out of your life. It's about just weighing things up through your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm particularly talking about an area around the belly button. You know, there's nothing mental about this at all. It's not about trying to think whether something's worthwhile or not. It's about feeling it. And
yeah, I know I get in trouble if I try and just think things through.
Well, it's the way we've always been taught.
Right.
You know, go to school, you weigh up all the pros and cons about a situation, and then try and make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we make choices that are just ludicrous.
Mm-hmm.
Because life is not logical.
Well, then we make choices, again, by comparisons or by direction from somebody else's consciousness. Yeah.
So the beauty of human design is you can recognize your own perfect way of making decisions.
I like that.
You know, it's a revolution when you start making decisions on your behalf that are always right because they're in accord with your nature.
What are the other types of authority, if you could just give us a little thumbnail on that?
Okay. Well, the other types are, there's a sacral authority, which is about getting a gut response to something.
Okay.
And it's pretty quick. It's about waiting until something comes to you and see what your lower belly has to say about it.
Okay.
A gut response can be a noise like, uh-huh, that sounds interesting to me. You know, literally it responds to something.
Hmm.
There's also a splenic authority. And this is somebody that just, they have a very powerful intuition about something, and they just get an instant hit on it.
Hmm.
And so very, very quick. There's also a heart authority. There are certain people have this heart authority. And literally what I say to them, it boils down to whatever they want is what needs to happen.
Hmm.
That they have to basically engage with life from their heart.
Hmm.
And it's not about going along with people's emotion or anything like that. It's about being really clear in their heart what they want.
That means I love it or I don't love it or something?
Yeah. It goes way, way deeper than that as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's ultimately, it's basically what works within my community, what works for my family or my sense of family. That's what the heart authority is about.
Hmm.
You know, what's basically in the service of the greater whole.
Hmm.
you know, the heart doesn't quibble about things.
Hmm.
You know, when you get a heartfelt intention towards something, that's the deal. That's what's happening.
Hmm.
The fifth of these authorities is what we call a self-authority. And there's a very small number of people that have that self-authority, but it's like when something approaches them, they get a sensation of joy if it's something they're to proceed with, and they don't get that sense of joy if it's not something appealing to them.
Wow. And so percentage-wise of people, like I know the emotional one, I think it said, I don't know, what is the percentage of people that are making decisions this way, like from the heart? One would think politically these days we'd want a whole bunch of them to be like that.
So there's actually a distinct minority of people with a heartfelt, with this heart authority.
Why did I suspect that?
Well, you know, it's just how it is. The majority of people have either a sacral authority, that's the gut response, or the emotional authority, which is about feeling their way through things.
Hmm.
Hmm. So I would say part of the reason that human design is here, apart from helping us make good decisions in life, is we are in a time where we absolutely need to understand the nature of emotions.
Right, okay.
Because the emotion center, it's one of these nine centers in the chart, it's the center of breathing disorders, it's the center of diabetes, it's the center of addictions, it's the center of kidney and bladder problems, it's the center of autism. It's the center of sex, food, drugs, and rock and roll.
Where is it in the body?
It's on the, well, in the life chart, it's on the right side. It's the brown triangle center on the right side towards the bottom end of the chart.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So you can see you've got it well colored in your chart.
Right.
So as an emotional being, you know when something gets offered to you, my first recommendation to you would be to take a deep breath.
Well, now that I'm a little older, it's easier for me to be patient and watch, yeah.
Yeah, but, if children can be apprised of this...
Yeah, that's an interesting concept.
And they do understand this design very easily.
Mm.
You know, we adults, we have to kind of have a bit more training. It has to be repeated a few times to us before we get it. But kids understand this stuff immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So if children understand the nature of their, you know, if they have a design where they've got this emotional authority, then they have a very, very different take on life.
Hmm.
And
that be wonderful? Because I kind of made a joke that I'm older now, but as I read through a lot of the book, I went, wow, I've been through that and that, the indecision, the moving too fast, the not being balanced, blah, blah, blah. It took a lot of years. Maybe a child could do it by 6 or 7, hey?
Well, yes, and then they can start educating their parents.
How young have you taught children? Have you taught children?
Yeah, oh yeah. I know kids 4 or 5 years old that understand their design.
Wow, how exciting.
Yeah, and it opens up a completely different atmosphere in the family. Because everyone's relating to each other. It's not like, hey, you're my kid and you're supposed to do this, that, and the other, because I didn't.
Right. Well, this is really exciting, actually. Do you give workshops for kids or parents who...
We're developing these now, yes. It takes a little bit to get these things together, but yes, we've been invited to go and... teach this whole thing in Poland to a whole gathering of school children there.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
How exciting.
Yeah.
All right, well,
I mean, you know, the educational scene in other parts of the world is, quite different than quite often what goes on in America. But it's going to catch. America is a place where human design is going to catch big time. Because it's not only things like, children and upbringing and parent-children relationships and school and stuff like that. I mean, human design ultimately is going to change the whole medical scene as well.
Oh, boy. How? By?
Well, if we're reading somebody's genetic coding in their chart,
mm-hmm.
you know, we can tell pretty much where it is they're going to get affected by disease.
Hmm. Well, that's an interesting thing. So, I can't tell that by looking at this chart, even though I am an intuitive. So you're going to have to explain that.
Okay. Well, I'd agree you're intuitive. You're somebody that basically is very quick on the uptake with things.
Thank you.
Very acoustic in nature as well. But, you know, what I would say to you is because you have such a strong definition in your emotional center,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're somebody that basically has to be very, very alert about your feelings.
Okay.
You know, what you feel about people, what you feel about situations. And as I said, you know, this is the center of breathing disorders and, you know, addictions and, all the highs and lows of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, looking in your chart, you're definitely here to be a celebrant of life.
Mm.
You know? But, you know, sometimes the party can go on a little bit too strongly. And
well,
it's just, you know, it's about gauging your limits in a way.
Yes.
That you are here to have a very bold spirit. You know, the amplitude of your spirit can turn up very high. Mm. But, you know, as high as you fly, you also can dive as deep. So you have to be able to find that balance, you know, what goes up goes down, and to find your place in the middle of all of that.
Yeah, I broke apart for a good 10 years earlier.
Yeah.
And that maybe would indicate that high, high, low, low, and initiation to push me into being authentic, would you
say? Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So.
And, you're incredibly sensitive.
Thank you.
Pick up other people's needs way before they know them themselves. And so, again, you have to be a little careful about, you know, how far do you reach out to assist other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, like you, that's my job.
Well, yes.
But, you know, even saying that, for you or me or many, many others, it really is a fine art of balancing to go off and be with yourself and then go out and serve other people. You got to keep your machine tuned, don't you?
Well, exactly. It is a balancing act. And, over the years, I've met all kinds of people that got in trouble assisting others too much, you know, and so much easier to help somebody else than it is to actually take care of yourself.
Yeah. I try to teach myself me first, just so that I can keep restoring that basic energy And then you can give all over the place. You don't get tired, hey?
Yeah. Well, you know, meditation will always bring you back into that that valuable, precious space of clarity.
Well, I wanted to ask a little bit more about that. Can you talk about tell people about the channels and what they, something else that they mean? Like you've got 16, 48, you've got 35, 36. What does that mean?
Okay. Well, as I said, in the life chart here, and anybody can get the free software from our website or get a free report from our website, humandesignforusall.com. But basically, when you get a printout of the chart, you get the type, authority, and profile printed out. But you also get these, if you have a chart, and 99% of charts have defined channels in them. And the channels, as I say, they're basically like the tree branches in the tree of life. And they connect the various energy centers together. And the thing of it is, when the energy centers, they're like energy vortices within the body, and they all relate to a gland or organ within us. But they have a particular frequency of their own. But when they connect to another center through one of these branches, then one of these channels is turned on. And it's like a different kind of math. You'd think add one center plus one center and you get two centers, but in actual fact, with the channel colored in, you get a third entity. And so there are 36 of these channels that connect between the various energy centers. And in your chart, you've got six of these channels that are colored in. You talked about the one we call the 1648. That's the channel of talent. So you're somebody who is born with talent.
Yay, we like that.
Well, you know, it's what you chose for this lifetime. And what I will say about talent is it's one thing to have talent. It's another thing to have the resources to be able to practice it.
Right.
So essentially in your life, you've always known, oh, I could play anything, musical, you know, I could do sewing, I could do painting, I could do all these different things creatively. But, you know, do you have the time and resources to be able to put in the practice for them?
Right.
So,
And I was, and when I grew up, I was, and many people probably experienced this, I was cautioned always not to go off in those directions because it's not practical.
Well, don't go on the stage, dear.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I mean, you know, and now that I'm 100 years old, I'm really pushing it. I'm just making a television series for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that the talent comes out in all kinds of different ways. I often tease people with that channel, you know, you can polish the dishes in a talented fashion. It's just a case of, you know, where do you want to put your energy? And when I look in your chart, now, with human design, there's a first with human design.
Okay.
We're able to read somebody's whole genetic makeup from the ancestral point of view.
Wow.
So we can see very much the conscious journey, what you're here to be aware of in your own conscious journey, but we can also see how the vehicle that you're in is constructed because of the genetic train that you've come through.
Hmm.
And we've traced charts back about four generations of ancestral input.
Wow.
So, you know, whatever was going on with great-great-granny comes down to play out in your life. And if great-granny had a trip together, you know, then you're going to have a kind of easy ride with it. But if she was undergoing difficult times, then, you know, that's something that you probably will have to resolve in your lifetime. So here it is. In human design, we click the mouse and we get this information right away. I tease people and say, this unconscious, this ancestral input, there's about 10 years worth of talking to a psychologist to get this information out of you.
Yes.
But now with human design, it's on the page. It's instant.
Couple of clicks, eh? Well, tell me this. Can you read like the cellular lineage as well or just the genetic? You know what I'm saying? Is that there a, is there a soul reflection in here?
Well, you know, very often when I get to talk to clients and I say, well, you know, this aspect of your makeup probably comes from your grandmother. And, you know, they'll come back and say, wow, that absolutely rings true because that's exactly how my granny was. I just adored her. And, you know, it was just, we had this such tremendous connection. And so, for instance, your mother's mother, what she gives to you is this incredible ability to fix anything. You know, probably she was very, very talented in her own way of being able to fix things. And probably everyone around her downplayed it.
Yes, yes, she was eccentric.
Eccentric and brilliant.
Yes.
And everyone would try and shut her up.
But also broke.
Well, what to do, you know, because she probably didn't understand her nature of how to be able to employ that great ability of hers.
That's right, yes.
You know, she used to get people go crazy because she was so good at fixing things in their lives.
But yeah, it's kind of interesting, isn't it?
So yeah,
you can see that in this darn beautiful diagram here?
Yes, it is. It's in here.
Oh my, how interesting. What else do you see? Do you see the father, the mother, the father's side and the mother's side, or just...
Yeah, what comes from your father's side is this very spirited nature of yours.
Mm.
And, you know, just... I mean, I say to the people with this gait, you know, typically you can be walking down the street and all of a sudden you get the sensation you need to start skipping or dancing. You know, and if start skipping and dancing, everyone's going to look around at you and say, well, there goes a crazy person.
I probably would be bursting into song in inappropriate places I do.
Well, that's, you know, that's the spirited part of your nature that you get from your dad.
Mm.
And from your mother's side of things, you know, there's a part of you that can basically get on with anybody. And a lot of people look to you to be able to resolve things in their lives.
That's true.
Especially on an intimacy level.
Ah, yeah, that's so quite true.
Yeah, that's something that comes down from your mother's side.
Hmm. And how far back? You said four generations?
Yes, four generations.
So once we know that, is there stuff that we can... Okay, talk about the physical. I'm not just talking about me here. I'm just saying, like, what you can see, and use my chart as an example, but what do you see as physical problems that maybe came down the pike?
Well, there's a potential for you to overburden your heart.
Okay.
You're very open-hearted, you're very generous, generous to a point of foolishness.
Oh, dear.
Well, you know, foolishness in a nice sense.
Uh-huh.
But you give anything away to anybody and they don't even ask you nicely.
That's probably true. I'm trying to correct that.
Well, you know, it's like, how do you want to play with it? But it's just to see, you don't altogether understand the values that everybody else puts on things.
No, I do not.
So if you get caught up in trying to mimic other people's ideas of values, then you can end up straining your heart.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So I just say to you, hands off, let it go.
Okay.
You know, be wise about it.
Okay.
But
that's an interesting connection there of the emotional and the generosity thing. Things don't mean things to me. I mean, except that much comes to me all at the same time.
Well, you know, it's not a dull life.
Not at all.
With this chart of yours, it's not a dull life at all.
No.
You know, you've been here in this lifetime and continue to be here to try everything.
Mm-hmm.
And in any which way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, push the envelope. That's what your whole life's about. It's pushing the envelope. I will say about your design as well is you've always been ahead of your time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've always had concepts that have been out in front of, you know, where most people are going with their thinking.
Mm-hmm. So, well, I love one of the parts I read said you come up with off-the-wall ideas, and I go, yeah, I always did that.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot of seasoning, a lot of years to figure out how to ground your dreams, if you will, or ground the ideas, doesn't it?
Well, it's just an ongoing dance, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some people get these things. I was wondering about this the other day because, you know, I know myself to be a late bloomer.
Me too.
You know, understanding things late on. And I thought, well, you know, if I'd understood all this stuff right at the get-go, I'd have probably been really bored after that.
Right. Well, Chetan, tell me what your the beginning is. Are you a manifestor generator as well? Or are you?
No, and I'm a projector. I'm a non-energy type.
Oh, okay. What does that mean, a non-energy type?
Well, I don't have the same kind of sustaining energy like you have.
Mm.
My wife is a generator, for instance. She's somebody who gets up in the morning and just keeps going, going, going. You know, out Christmas shopping, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And looks after so many different things. And sometimes when I, you know, just stand back and watch her in motion, I actually feel tired watching her.
I've been told that from people watching me. Yeah. That's funny.
And it's just, you know, don't have the energy to keep up. It's
But part of it is being a woman.
I guess it is. I guess, you know, there's a great sense of responsibility. But, you know, I say that teasingly. A projector basically is here to assist in steering things. We're very good at guiding things.
Ah.
So...
Well, you're doing that with your work, huh?
Yeah, it seems to fit. And, you know, a lot of the energy types, they're just busy doing stuff and... they can crash into things in their life without really realizing there was an alternative way of doing things. So projectors are very good at steering people towards alternative ways of seeing things.
Aha.
And the thing of it is, though, we have to get invited to be able to do that. It's not enough for us just to try and jump in front of everybody and say, hey, I can show you a better way to do this.
I have a girlfriend who's very, very creative and is extremely frustrated because She helps a lot of people do things, but never seems to be. She says, I'm invisible. Nobody seems to recognize me. I'm always waiting for that recognition and to be brought forward. And I was reading the projector and I went, oh, that sounds like Kathy, actually.
Yes, I bet it is.
And I'm going to read that to her soon so that she'll feel better and maybe use it better, you know?
Well, exactly. And there is a perfect formula for all of these things. It's not like, oh, you're a projector, you've got no energy, you're handicapped. Far from it.
It's like how you use it.
When I was in a comparative age in my life, trying to relate my life according to other people's lives, mm-hmm. and I thought, oh, well, everyone's having such a great time, and somehow me as the projector is being left out of things. And I used to try and include myself in things and find I got in terrible trouble doing that. And the thing of it is a projector were designed to wait for invitation.
Hmm.
And the invitations, I mean, in my experience now, you only need a few good invitations in your whole life, and you're already connected into things that are important for you.
So you were brought forward by having that suggestion from the reader in India, right? That was your recognition beginning on that level, wasn't it?
Well, honestly, it had never occurred to me to do this kind of work.
Yeah, really?
I mean, I remember looking back, you know, I used to play around looking at people's tea leaves and stuff like that in their teacup, but it never occurred to me to do this as a livelihood. Hmm. But he really brought it to my attention, and it turned out, actually, that I do have a gift for this. I do have a knack for this.
But isn't that true, that it's like an invitation?
It was like an invitation. He gave me an invitation. I turned him down, actually.
Yeah. Well, that's your prerogative, darling.
Yes, well, there it is. Yes.
I want to say something, too, about I have a wonderful partner. We met 9 years ago. But where I was reading about relationship in, I guess, in my profile.
Yes.
When it said that I would do better if I had someone who would recognize me, somebody who was authentic, somebody who would take me by the hand to ground me into the various creativities I wanted to do. I think I'm paraphrasing it pretty well.
Yeah.
But that's exactly what we have for each other right now.
Yeah.
And I feel like we grew into it. So I thought you might say something about that.
Well, the profile is the third of the three keys. And there are 12 of these different profiles, and we each have one of them. Hmm. The profile that you've got is actually, it's one of the rarer profiles.
Oh, good.
You have a 2-5 profile.
I'd like to be rare. That's good.
Well, medium rare, anyhow.
Turn it over.
So, you know, a 2-5 profile, basically, Veronica, you may have found that in this life, a lot of people have all kinds of ideas of who you are, but nobody really very often gets you.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's a little bit of a projection field around you.
Yeah, I have a sister who's 17 months older, and she actually said one day, you never care about anything. Boy, if you knew me well, I care so much it's crippling at times, you know?
Yeah.
But she's my sister, so there you have it. That's a good example.
Yeah. And so, again, you know, with that kind of profile, you have to find your own way in life. And the possibility is, living in a projection field, that you can go along with other people's concepts of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can invent concepts for yourself and start playing that out. So you're kind of living in your own Hollywood drama, in a way.
Well, I've done that.
The thing of it is, you know, it's about having a recognition sometimes of just cutting through all of that.
Huh.
That your essence is actually a very innocent one. And, you know, you're here to live a life in a very natural way. So, for you, stepping into something that looks totally straightforward and obvious to you, for somebody else, may look like, why are you doing that? That's totally naive, or, you know, that there's a much more complex and contrived way of doing it, or sophisticated way of doing it. And, you know, you learn sophistication during your lifetime, but you'll find actually what really suits you is your own natural, innocent way of doing things.
I think that's true, isn't it? Yeah.
So, you know, that's not the same for everybody. That's very much in your profile.
So what's your profile? Can we ask you that?
Yeah, of course. I'm a 2-4 profile.
Oh, okay.
And it's not totally dissimilar to yours,
mm-hmm.
But a 2-4 profile, I call it naturally heartfelt. Hmm. You know, again, there's a certain kind of innocence in my makeup that always wants to have an inclusion, because the fourth line part of it is always wanting to include everybody.
Oh, okay.
The fifth line part that you've got, the 2-5 profile, is very much takes on the role of a leader or the teacher, sometimes the rescuer. Mm-hmm. You know, that you're very good at being able to apply yourself to sorting out other people's issues and can jump directly into doing that.
And I'm not afraid of that.
Right. It's part of your nature.
Well, I want to say something about myself here, me, but the thing that scares me the most about people is hidden things that I can sense and perceive that never are allowed to be talked about. So I tend to be really good at going into the crud with people because I'd rather do that than sit in a room where you used a term called projection field.
Yes.
Rather than be in that swamp, I would prefer to go through even the darkest stuff with people. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because to me, it's terrifying when you go to a room of people where nobody's really expressing what's true. As a little kid, I used to be very sick at times.
Yeah, well, I generally go to sleep in those environments.
I went to sleep in a Bob Dylan live concert. you're right, I'm different, right?
Well, he was probably past his prime.
One of us was, anyway. No, it's just I fall asleep in a group of people sometimes, too, is what I'm agreeing with you on.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You can fall asleep from being in a safe environment or where your system gets overloaded by other people's stuff.
So. Yeah, and it's that other people's stuff that has been a bane in my existence most of my life.
Okay. Well, you know, where you will get mostly overloaded in your design is picking up other people's thoughts.
Mm.
And you know when you walk into a room, Veronica, you're very open-minded, and you literally, as you walk in the room, you can tell what everyone's thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to appreciate by now most of what people are thinking is complete nonsense.
Yeah, or else it's judgmental.
Or detrimental or negative, yeah.
Yeah, and it's scary because as people, I guess what fascinates me is to become authentic, which you're helping us with, you really have to wade through all of that kind of damaging thought projection that comes at us and really work to separate yourself from it. And I don't think most people are aware of that at all.
Well, what can we say? You know, the tempo of the planet Earth perhaps is raising its vibration to move into another dimension, the fifth dimension.
Right.
My understanding of a fifth dimension is thoughts become manifest.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's part of it, anyhow. So essentially, I'd say the Earth is very much in a holding pattern at the moment until people understand that negative thoughts or destructive thoughts or anti-life thoughts or, you know, power trips and all that stuff, they don't really help. You know, they're not creative.
And you could take them with you too, couldn't you?
Yeah, conceivably, yes.
Yeah.
You start manifesting destruction all around you, and then nobody's getting it. Well, we kind of lose our whole sense of consciousness and form.
Who we are. I want to ask you one more question about the universe when you're talking about ascension and so on. When I'm looking at these channels, I'm going, are they also connected to universal vibrations? Will they move us? Let me see. Can we use them to move through many dimensions and achieve, you know, a greater level of ascension? I know I said something like this earlier.
Well, essentially, yes. I mean, as I say, your life chart mm-hmm. is a snapshot of the universe,
mm.
that you are born as a perfect being. And when certain of these channels within you start vibrating in accord with what's going on in the universe, absolutely, you know, you're part of the whole changing vibration that goes on here.
So as we read into our, like you were talking about the power trips and all the projected thoughts and so on, as we read into our and become more astute about our authentic nature, then our process of ascension is made perhaps more easy? Are we greasing the skids there?
Well, I mean, step back a little bit and look at this universe. The only thing that's flying through this universe is love.
Hmm.
It's the only thing going on here.
And if we authenticate enough, we do love ourselves more, don't we?
Well, you know, that's square one, mm-hmm. is love yourself. You know, most people are taught to hate themselves.
I know.
You know, you're born in sin, you live in sin, and you die in sin. And what a
And who
dreadful,
do you think you are?
Yeah, what a dreadful scenario that is.
I know.
You know, what an incredible power trip that has been. You know, that religions have lived off forever. You know, put all your money in the poor box and we'll pray for you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we're born as a perfect being. And the design just points that out, and it shows you how to live with yourself and how to honor yourself and love yourself. And when you come into that state of self-love, then you can start loving everybody else.
What do you think about our leaders right now? Do you think that, like, if we look at them and relate it to the human design system, do you think that the leaders of today are actually reflect, and all the illumination that's going on, the showing of the deceptions and all of that, can you see in there that they're built for this evolutionary coming from the heart or the consciousness that's required? Or what do you see, Shaitan?
Well, honestly, what I see, Veronica, is a broken system.
Oh,
I really do see a broken system.
And we want that, don't we?
I don't know what we want to, it's just the flavor of what is. You know, the banks are broken, the insurance things are broken, the mortgage system's broken, the health scheme thing's broken. All of these things are broken, and it's all part of a transcendence of the age going from the Piscean age to the Aquarian age. It's all a natural thing. The question is, what do we do about it? You know, do we keep on trying to reinvent something that doesn't work? Mm-hmm. Or do we allow ourselves to evolve through a space of trust and understanding and love into a whole new paradigm?
And do you think that enough of us doing that creates that movement through the collective of a much higher species? Or, or do you think we have leaders?
Yeah.
Beg your pardon?
There's always that possibility, mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, meditation is the key to finding clarity within yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ask me, are the leaders up for it in these times?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly speaking, mm-hmm. I think, what is it, about 9 or 10% of people actually trust the government now?
Right.
I mean, that's
not a very high rating.
I think Mr. Obama, my heart goes out to him because I see him as a visionary who's looking a long way down the road.
Mm-hmm.
But he's dealing with people that have petty interests, mm-hmm. and they have their little power trips at their hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see him trying to implement things that are essential to be put in place, but honestly, he's stymied by a system that really doesn't work anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's all evolving.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there is a revolution happening in America, but it's a silent one. It's a consciousness revolution.
Mm-hmm.
I have a great trust in America that this is where the next jump in consciousness is going to take place.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be places like Tibet and India and China, and now it's come to America.
What about Britain?
Well, Britain has a nice hand on things as well, but it's a little fossilized.
So let's... have you seen the movie Zeitgeist?
I have, yes.
Yeah, and there's an awful lot of young people that are really conscious of the fact that religions have been used to kind of control the masses and so on. And you were talking about being in Istanbul. Do you want to share that bit of information that you shared with me before we started the show?
Well... I've been in Istanbul quite a number of times in my life. It's a very interesting place. It's, used to be the center of the universe or center of the world. All the ships and camel trains used to come through there.
Hmm.
The economy there at the moment is booming, unlike a lot of other places on the planet.
Hmm.
It came to my attention that Christianity was invented in Istanbul. It was a place called Constantinople at the time. And it was invented in about 300 AD,
That's
300
interesting.
Years after Jesus the Christ took off.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the Emperor Constantine wanted equal billing with Jesus. He wanted to have an equal billing in terms of the value of the church. And it was from Istanbul that, it used to be a Christian nation for a long time after that.
Hmm.
But then there was a split, and the Orthodox Christian thing went off one way, and the Roman one went off another way.
Hmm.
And, they're still trying to settle their differences.
Well,
it was something that was put together a good 300 years after Jesus the Christ.
Hmm. Yeah, because Jesus basically didn't teach all that, did he?
No, he didn't. It was most of it. It was this character Saul from Tarsus, Paul. That was a lot of his work that was the foundation for all that beginning part of Christianity.
Hmm.
I mean, the whole Catholic Church as well, all Catholic priests used to be allowed to be married until the 1100s.
Hmm.
And then one of the popes decided that was all finished.
Hmm.
They used to believe in past lives up until about the 1300s, and then they eliminated that from all their texts.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's an ongoing fabrication. Certainly a lot of people get a lot from it, But, you know, it is a religion. It is a, you know, a belief system. And I'm always amazed when I look around the world and just to see, you know, you stand out in nature and you look at the sun and you look at the trees and the birds and everything. And then you, where did people get all these ideas from? Mm-hmm. About God and this and that?
God is so unfolding, or whatever divinity you want to call it, you know.
Yes.
Well, this is all very exciting. What did you say about, talk about the Vatican and the Banks of America? I'm not just trashing Christianity here. I'm just trying to bring forward concepts that are being revealed these days that a lot of times we were blind to, or we were in denial about, weren't we, as a species? And I think we're waking up.
Well, you know, the most unfortunate thing about the Catholic Church is the banning of marriage. Mm-hmm. Amongst the priests. Mm-hmm. Because then, you know, when the priests have to be celibate, then they start chasing after little boys instead. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a natural thing for people to be sexual. And the whole thing got distorted from that. I can't necessarily say the Catholic Church is worse than any of the others, but, you know, it's built on a nice idea that, you know, there was a great man at one time, Jesus the Christ, and you know, it's a fascinating story about Jesus up until the age of 10, and then there's a big gap until the age of 30. And there's no acknowledgement of the fact that he spent those years traveling in India and Tibet and Japan and places and China, and learning all the what came from the presence of Buddha in that part of the world. I mean, the Sermon on the Mount is not that far of a translation from what's in the Dhammapada. It was some 500 years prior to it.
But isn't it the same old story, is that when people start telling the story, even if it's a game called Password, we put it through our filters of control or design or even greed, don't we?
Yeah. And basically, you know, part of the Piscean Age was that whole thing about beliefs. Mm-hmm. And the whole coming into the Aquarian Age, you look at the symbol for Aquarius, it's the two waves together,
right.
Or it's the water bearer. And it's basically a time with the two waves, what's above has to be below. We have to be living in a higher vibration. And the water bearer, it's all about carrying your own consciousness. That in this time, we have to be responsible for ourselves and for our own life. Mm-hmm. It's no longer possible to put our trust in priests. It's no longer possible for us to blame God for everything. You know,
or trust, whether it's the banks or the government or the religions, or I'm sure the Muslims have their same kind of problems, don't you think?
Well, yes. You try and live your life by somebody else's formula, it's not going to work.
Right.
You're here as a unique individual. You come here to be yourself. And the beautiful thing about human design is it indicates to you how to be that self.
And I believe so much that it's a tool for awakening, which is crucial these days, isn't it?
Absolutely essential, yes.
Well, it's been very, very exciting and fun to talk to you. I'd love to continue a lot longer. Maybe you'll come back on with us.
That would be my great pleasure, Veronica. See how your listeners get on with it and see if there's any requests for me to come back and talk with you.
Okay, that'll be wonderful. And I would like you to give your contact information again.
Well, the easy thing for everybody is go to our website. It's called Human Design for Us All, exactly as it sounds. Human Design for Us All. You can go there, you can get a free report for yourself, you can find the free software, and there's details about the classes we offer and the trainings that we do with people. We travel all over the world, love to do trainings for people, love to introduce people to themselves.
Oh, I think it's such exciting work. Also, I just want to finish with one comment, which is that the beautiful drawing, the blueprint drawing, is kind of sacred geometrics, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. So that's a whole other flavor that we haven't got into yet.
Yeah.
I wish you the very best of your season and your workshops, and I'd love to contact you again.
Well, thank you very much, Veronica. It's been my pleasure to talk with you today.
Thank you, Chetan Parkin. Good night.
Bye.
So this is Veronica Entwistle saying, well, that was lively and fun and just really got me going. I got to figure out more about who I am, because I really believe that becoming authentic is a part of the great shift, becoming who we really are. We need to support each other as we do that and learn about it. That's where the real power is, I think. I enjoy this human design. So I want to say thank you so much for listening to the show. Coming up, we have a goddess for every day. Her name is Julie Lohr. She's going to be talking to you about infusing your days with certain feminine deities or deitesses or whatever they're called. So tune in soon. Many blessings to all of you, and thank you for listening.